Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello and welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Stephanie. And I think we know what we're going to be talking about this week.
I thought we could do the tube. We did a tube a lot. We talk about trains. We could talk about only street furniture. Or what?
This is how you know that John is a native Londoner, because even though we are recording this the day after a terrorist attack on Westminster Palace, he's still going, but ticket barriers, I have some thoughts.
Okay, there's been a lot of talk about the stoicism of London, these events, you know, the keep calm and carry on thing, and, you know, like, we don't, you know, when the shit hits the fan, London goes to the pub, that kind of stuff. But it is, and, you know, I know this is probably actually quite a universal thing, and it's probably patronising to pretend this is something specific to the British character or London or whatever it is. But it is kind of true. Everyone's unfazed by it. Like, these are my main memories of 7/7 in 2005, which was, you know, a much bigger incident in which, you know, 50 or 56, it was something like that. There was a much, much higher death toll. And once the sort of immediate shock passed and you kind of established that you didn't know anyone who was dead, everyone just kind of went, oh, well, let's go get a drink then. You know, it's like, I remember there being picnics in Soho Square because the tube was down. So everyone just got like some bottles and some sandwiches and went and sat in the wing, you know. And that's just, it just doesn't feel like, I mean, There is a danger of overstating it and it turning out that one of our listeners has just lost someone, one of the nearest and dearest or something. But I just don't feel like it's quite as big a deal as the media is perhaps trying to make it.
I think the difficult thing is it's always going to be split, isn't it? Because even if you don't know anyone involved, you have that feeling of just kind of immense sorrow for people who do know someone who's involved and how terrible that must be to have somebody not come home. And yet equally, I think there is something in most big cities where you go, nothing is to be gained from me not behaving normally in the face of this. And actually, I think there is something of a self-conscious spirit of resilience in that people go, obviously I'm going to get up and go to work the next day. I'm not allowed to take a day off just because a terrorist attack happens in my city. Yeah. But there is also a point of pride in going, your aim is to disrupt the regular way of life, and we utterly reject that.
I mean, I think to an extent this is a function of, even 7/7 was not that huge an attack. Like, it was an order of magnitude smaller than the Madrid bombings in 2004, and that was an order of magnitude smaller than something like 9/11. So by the time you get to an attack in the city with a death toll running into thousands, that's huge, and that is going to be traumatic, because, you know, even if you haven't lost someone, you will probably know someone who has, or it's, you know, it's just likely enough that it's gonna hurt. Whereas when it's a dozen people, it's, you know, people die in this city every day. It's a big city, you know.
Yeah, although I think there's something symbolically quite upsetting for people, especially something like Westminster Bridge, where people all over the world may have visited it or have photos of their loved ones there. And obviously that's partially why you pick that target, is that you know that you're doing something more than just ending individual lives. You're making a statement about what you're doing.
It's one of those places everyone has been at some point, right? You will have been to Westminster Bridge if you live in London.
Right, and it was also, as Stephen Bush put it in his morning call email, one of the most covered terrorist attacks ever because it took place outside the window of the press offices at the Houses of Parliament. So, you know, very quickly its impact spread. You had a lot of journalists covering it straight away. And I think those of us who are journalists or who do work in central London or know people who do, you do have a sense of connectedness to it as a landmark and as a place where your colleagues are down there every day and things like that. And I think something of that resonance does break through to the wider world in that it's the mother of all parliaments. It's known worldwide as a symbol.
I don't know. I worry we overstate that. I don't think the whole world looks on us as this sort of beacon of democracy. I think that's a sort of self-flattering lie we tell about ourselves.
We still have
like a queen and, you know, an unelected second chamber and, you know,
I also don't think we should, you know, project cynicism into people around the world. I think there are people to whom, even if you don't kind of go, gosh, I so admire the British Parliament, they know what it is in the way that you might not be able to visualise the Canadian Parliament building. Obviously you can, it's the great one that they weed all over. Is that right?
I can't.
No, with the copper roof?
Maybe?
No.
I don't know.
Someone write in and tell me if I'm wrong. I have a feeling it has a copper roof and they urinated on it to make it oxidise faster. There's a building in... Anyway. I'm getting off the point.
I'm looking forward to a City Metric post headline. 17 buildings someone pissed on.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating. There's 17 buildings that you don't realise are oxidised, because this I love about the Statue of Liberty, that obviously it didn't always look like
that.
It wasn't always green. Yeah. But coming back to the point, there is that, you know, obviously the mother of all parliaments, I'm kind of putting in inverted quotation marks, but it is known through positive means or otherwise.
Okay, here's a fact we don't talk about very often, and which I'm slightly concerned is tempting fate by even mentioning it. But as far as I can tell, this is the longest, it's been 12 years now, this is the longest gap between bombings in London in decades, possibly a century or more.
Yeah, that sounds like it might be, yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, there's...
Is there some wood I can touch in this room?
But no, someone pointed this out to me. Matt Brown, the former editor of Londonist, pointed this out to me a while ago, and he didn't want to write an article on it for, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
Because once you write the article, the next day is when something explodes. But it is quite interesting. Like, if you look at there is a page on Wikipedia of, you know, terrorist attacks on London, and there's a lot of them. Like, there is a period in the mid-70s where the IRA are letting off 6 or 7 bombs a year. And now I think you can oversimplify it with kind of reading across from this to London's stoicism in the face of these things these days. But at the same time, I think there is some truth in the idea that, you know, it is kind of something that everyone knows has always been part of the city's history.
And I guess this is what I'm trying to get at, in that on the one hand you go, oh my God, please stop talking about Blitz spirit and putting crowns on things. I object to it on an instinctual level.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, I go, actually, if you live in a city where you see war memorials all around you and you spot the places that were bombed and you see the housing blocks that stop at odd right angles because actually the house that was at the end of the terrace is obliterated, you live in a city that has a sense of endurance, and maybe there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to that. I think it's... I think it is less of a shock when stuff does happen, when there is visible evidence around of stuff having happened in the past.
And having been survived in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean, it's one of those things where I think the best revenge Londoners love to indulge in is, you know, going straight back to having a moan about Pret sandwiches.
Or Greggs. We could do Greggs. Okay, so here's something else I learned from that page the Wikipedia page of past terrorist attacks on London. In the early 1980s, there was a Scottish liberation organisation that kept sending letter bombs to London in an attempt to get independence for Scotland.
Wow.
And not one of them ever worked. Like, it's like, there's like 4 or 5 of these things across a period of about 2.5 years, and like every one of them includes the phrase made safe. But they just kept sending letter bombs everywhere. It's quite, you know, it's...
I thought the Scots were good at inventing things.
I mean, you'd think, but it turns out that maybe the Scots Liberation Army or whatever it was they called themselves wasn't attracting the best and the brightest of the Scottish population.
Maybe. Of course, you know, now we have a very different independence conversation going on, thankfully bomb-free so far.
We touched on the Manchester bomb last week, but I think that's a really interesting one because it was a huge explosion, but it is seen as this kind of, I don't want to say positive moment, but it is kind of this sort of pivotal moment in the city's history, which does allow it to do a lot of the positive things that have happened since. And I find that quite an interesting dynamic.
Are you trying to goad me over that meme that's going around Twitter? Is this what we're heading towards?
I don't know this meme. Tell me the meme.
Stop smiling. You know you've seen
I know I genuinely don't know. No, I'm smiling because I've accidentally goaded you and that does give me pleasure, but I don't know how I've done it. So.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, to address your point, yeah. I mean, I think the fact that, you know, there wasn't big casualties from it. It was a scary moment. I remember it very distinctly, but
a friend tells me he was literally driving into the city at the time and saw what looked like a mushroom cloud and panicked. And it took half a second for him to think, no, hang on, if that was an actual mushroom cloud, I would not be here to see it.
But he thought somebody had nuked Manchester. Yeah. That would have had a much bigger impact on the city. But I think that's it. It's this kind of moment of actually the cost ended up not being huge. You didn't have this rising death toll. You didn't have this coverage. You just had a moment of going, actually, the police got people out and the Arndale Centre was bombed and you had the image of the city being bombed, but you didn't have the aftermath and you didn't have the public mourning. So it was kind of allowed to do something very different. The meme, oh my God, I can't believe you've not seen this. So it's a photo of the collapsed half of the Arndale Centre with someone's post going, we didn't say anything against Catholics when the IRA were bombing us, therefore let's not indulge in Islamophobia now.
So what you're saying is that you're okay with Islamophobia?
No, what I'm... See?
Okay. No. I'm sorry, that was low.
No, but you're poking me. No, but the reason I find it so infuriating is not only that, obviously, it's ahistorical, we know
there's
that...
There's an enormous amount of, you know,
yeah, it's
prejudice
it's
against
ludicrous.
Catholics
and
the
you
Irish
had people,
more generally.
You know,
yeah.
We had to pay out money to the Birmingham Six, who were erroneously arrested and kind of treated horribly, and we know that, and, you know... My friend's actually just written to me to say that one of his relatives changed their name during that. But, you know, we know it was a bad time. But it's not just that. It's not just the kind of glossing over history. It's the fact that what we can take away from past instances of xenophobia and hatred is, thank God that's over. Mm. Thank God we mostly don't behave in that way anymore. And that's the inspirational message you should take is, for God's sake, let us learn our lesson from those past times when we behave that way. And I'm not kind of saying that's necessarily equivalent to Islamophobia now, which functions in a specific way and on a specific scale and is kind of globally motivated. I just don't envy anyone who has to go out into London today and worry about how they might be treated. I feel incredibly lucky to be kind of anonymous in the city. But for God's sake, the way to combat that is to go, we got this wrong before, let's get it right this time, rather than pretend that we were flawless. Sorry,
yeah,
please.
No, I think, yeah, I get that. And I think we also do this with the Blitz to a certain extent. I mean, what we don't often talk about is that during the Blitz, there was also an enormous amount of crime because it was quite easy to nip into someone's house and steal stuff when they were hiding in a sort of metal-plated shed at the bottom of the garden. And, you know, there is a reason that the... you know the idea of the Spiv, like the Private Walker character in Dad's Army?
Yeah, yeah.
But that comes specifically out of how a certain type of person was behaving during the Luftwaffe campaign against buildings in London. But we don't talk about that side of the Blitz because it doesn't fit in with this narrative of national resilience and, you know, shaking your fist at the bombers as they go past and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, but I think it's quite a natural thing to kind of look back with sort of rose-tinted glasses on stuff we've survived before and think, you know, we survived that, we can survive this.
I think that's true, and I definitely have sympathy, and this is why I've not kind of aggressively tweeted at the person who made this meme or the people sharing it, because I don't want to kind of go, no, your instinct to try and create a positive narrative is wrong right now. But there is something to me that echoes. Think of the situation we have on the left, for instance, where if you say there's anti-Semitism on the left, people go, no, we're the good guys, we couldn't have any anti-Semitism. And what happens is we end up kind of not addressing the anti-Semitism. I think there's
somebody who spent some time a couple of summers ago arguing that there was anti-Semitism on the left. I am aware of this.
Well, I've argued that there's sexism on the left, but apparently there's not. I've been corrected on that front.
It was very nice of those men to clear that up for you, wasn't it?
It is. You know, they're just so generous because I'm never going to know enough. And they always take the time to just make sure I've got the facts right. And I really appreciate it.
Can I tell you my mansplainer joke?
Is it a meta joke? What?
No, it's not a joke. Okay, I'll just tell it to you. Where does a mansplainer get his water?
Well, actually.
It's from a well, actually. You've just blown the punchline.
I'm sorry. Yeah. This is me destroying the patriarchy one ruined joke at a time. Can we tell people what happened to your Twitter today?
I mean, that wasn't... It's just a bug on TweetDeck. It's not very exciting, but just like for a moment, it told me I had minus one followers.
Guys, what happened is John's takes were so bad, he went into negative followers.
It's not only can nobody read my tweets, but every time I tweet, somebody forgets something I said in the past, so...
That's brilliant, because that's kind of the perfect... metaphor for the situation with the IRA Catholicism. Yeah. No, but quite seriously, I think there is something about we are fallible and we can be very cruel and we can treat people very badly. And I think going, we never behaved that way in the past and it's new makes it harder to tackle it in the present.
No, I agree, but I think there is a certain amount of I'm being very careful with my words over this. I think there is a certain amount of positive sentiment out there today. I think people feel a great deal of pride in the diversity of this city, in the resilience of this city, and in the fact that, you know, we have a brown Muslim mayor on television refusing to answer questions posed by tweets sent by Donald Trump Jr. and sending the message, you know, London is open, everyone is welcome here. We are not scared. And I think that's all positive stuff. And okay, there is a certain amount of self-congratulation and myth involved. But I would rather we deluded ourselves about things that are actually good rather than, like, everything is going to be fine after Brexit, which is not a good thing. And actually is going to... That's the thing that's really going to send us down this path of post-imperial nostalgia and bitterness, is this idea that we don't have to work with our partners. I don't think diversity is a problem. I don't think resilience is a problem. I think thinking you're better than everyone else is a problem.
Yes, which I suppose is the other side of the same coin. Stop being dicks about everything, guys.
Yeah.
Just be good.
This has been quite a serious episode. Who knew that a terrorist attack would be such a serious business?
I will say, though, I got to Cannon Street this morning and still, you know, for all that London has risen phoenix-like from the ashes over and over again, there was still a load of people who didn't get their sodding Oyster card out until they were already stood between the barriers.
My first thought on what to say to that would have been really offensive, so I'm not going to do that.
Good. Good.
We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.